as you can, high enough to see who you are, little man.
The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Nicole McMahon for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Oprah Daily. For the next half hour, I'll be reading a collection of articles from OprahDaily.com that explores spirituality, finding meaning, and discovering joy in everyday life. Let's begin. How do you pray when you're not sure who's listening? A former pastor put this question to five spiritual thinkers, and here's what they said. By Rebecca Gamir, published September 4, 2025. I'm sitting in a small light-filled room, looking out a window onto a yard dotted with juniper pine and fruit trees. It's a cool morning in New Mexico, and a slight breeze brushes my arms. The dogs are downstairs announcing who's coming and going, and since the house is right on the street, there's a lot of announcing. Me, I'm looking for a quiet place inside. I'm trying to pray. The friend I'm house-sitting for, writer Lauren DePino, invited me to try out her prayer room in her absence. I think prayer is communing with the divine, and also our ancestors and loved ones who've passed, she told me. I feel like it's funneling light and protection and comfort and goodwill towards others. I feel good vibes here. On one side of the window is a small drawing of St. Francis Assisi's arms outstretched towards a flock of fluttering white birds. On the other side is a photo of Lauren's late aunt, deeply beloved and possessor of an ethereally dazzling smile. Even during the 14 years I served as a pastor, I sometimes felt anxious and confused about prayer. While I believed that God was listening, I wondered, was I doing it right? Would it make a difference? What about the times I and others prayed for healing, but the opposite happened? 4 years ago, when I wrote an essay about how, overcome with doubt, I left my pastoral calling and given up on my faith, readers responded with Bible verses, suggestion of other religions, and a few hints that I was headed for hell. I was able to brush off most of this feedback, but one comment stuck with me. In response to my confession that I still pray, a reader challenged, "Who are you praying to?" His question set me on a path of inquiry that I'm still tunneling into today. With all my doubts about God, why do I still feel drawn to prayer? Who do I think is listening? My list of concerns, a close friend with cancer, starving babies half a world away, the safety and well-being of my own children, feels like a speck of mist falling into a roiling ocean of unending need. And yet, I continue to send these entreaties out into the universe, choosing to trust that some gracious hand will receive them. Perhaps praying springs from my natural empathy as well as certain humility. We long to do something when they're suffering, yet we're fully aware of our limitations in the face of tragedy. Some say prayer may change the one who prays most of all. Theologian Miroslav Vav wrote, "There is something deeply hypocritical about praying for something you are unwilling to resolve. Why don't you do something?" We might plead with God, when the question might just as well be addressed to the one in the mirror. These moments of clarity may move us into action, offering support and relief to those in need. I think of prayer as both praise and petition, a way to offer thanks and draw closer in a relationship with the divine, as well as to seek guidance when the way forward seems unclear. For me, a sense of connection to the divine happens most often in nature. A shaft of sunlight hitting the rain-drenched leaves, a wood thrush solo in the early morning, a vast dark sky shimmering with stars. These moments fill me with awe and gratitude and bless me with a deep soul-stealing peace that lifts me above my worries. Curious to learn of others' experiences, I reached out to some people who regularly write about spiritual matters. What they shared helps me think about prayer in a new way, that ultimately there is no wrong way to come into presence of love. We only need bring our truest, most open-hearted selves and trust in the mystery of this spiritual practice. Prayer can take any form. Nafeez Alum, PhD, an associate professor of social work at the University of Nebraska, was raised in the Muslim faith but now describes himself as agnostic. Still, he admits he continues a practice of prayer. "I pray every day, but it's nothing formal or structured," he says. "There is no precise bowing, no memorized verses. I might ask for help with a decision, share what's weighing on me, or simply acknowledge the beauty in a quiet moment. For me, praying means fostering a personal connection with the Creator. I've come to believe, and through my own questioning, it's freeing, authentic, and grounding in love rather than fear. Pastor Zach Lambert, co-founder of the Post-Evangelical Collective and author of Better Ways to Read the Bible, echoes that idea. Sometimes it's words, sometimes it's silence. Sometimes it's gratitude, longing, grief, or awe. But at its core, I think it's about being present with God, with ourselves, with the world. I try to be honest with God in prayer, even when it means I don't know what to say. Prayer can be dialogue. Amanda Held-Opelt, the author of the book Holy and Happiness, shares that, from her perspective on Christian faith, prayer is simply a conversation with God. Being a conversation, it is inherently bidirectional. This means not just talking at God. I'm listening to God as well. So prayer is often expressed as silence, contemplation, and observation of what God might be saying to me through the world around me. A walk in nature, a feast, or a symphony can be a prayer if I remain attentive to the presence of God in it all. Prayer expands us. Rabbi Daniel Ruttenberg is the author of On Repentance and Repair and writes a newsletter called Life is a Sacred Text. On the messy business of trying to be a person in the world, she says, I believe that when I pray, I connect to the great infinite everythingness, and the small well within me returns to its infinite wellspring. I fill up, I pull down the sacred interconnectedness that connects and binds us all, and become less my small petty self, and more full of the great largeness that is all of us, everything, and more than what we can know from here. Prayer is connection. One of the beautiful things about prayer is that it's communal, meaning I know I'm never the only person in the world talking to God, as Opelt. When words fail me, I know I can count on the prayers of the community of the saints to advocate on my behalf. And I don't just mean the prayers of the current family and friends. There's a vast and generational family of God who have written down prayers and liturgies for us to recite when we're struggling to pray and relate to God. And this is the great gift in times of confusion, doubt, and disillusionment. Rabbi Ruttenberg says, in almost all cases, the traditional Jewish liturgy is written in the first person plural. Not I, we. So when we pray as Jews, we always pray as a collective, not only for our individual selves, but for everyone. Heal us, bring us peace, we have sinned. The question of whether or not a particular piece of liturgy feels like it applies to me today is irrelevant. It's never just about me. It is, I believe, a very specific way of expressing something of our deepest selves, and not only naming it, but offering it up to the divine, the big bigness, the great beyond, whatever language you want to use. My friend Eileen Drennan, a writer, names many people in her morning meditations. She told me, when I pray for you, I'm not sure what happens, but I feel like I'm putting another penny in your bank of love. That resonates with me. We don't have to know the meaning of prayer or how it works to ask for wholeness and healing for the world. In fact, I'm beginning to see prayer as evidence of the imprint of the divine on us. A holy longing we carry in our hearts, a practice that leads us deeper and deeper into love that benefits all. That leads us to the next article. Welcome to the Journey Within. These teachings from humanitarian spiritual teacher Gurudev can guide you no matter where you are in life. By Gurudev Sri Sri Ravi Shankar, September 28, 2023. Balancing ups and downs. Life is a play of opposites. Sometimes there's failure, sometimes you meet with success. At times there's gain, and at other times there's losses. Sometimes there's happiness and sometimes pain. These things come and go. When you get something you want, you soar to the ceiling. When you lose something, you fall hard. This isn't advisable. If from within we lose our balance, our centeredness, we won't be able to move forward in life. So wisdom is keeping the equanimity, the balance in life. When you accept that contrasting experiences enrich each other, life is less stressful. Opposite values simply coexist on the planet. Creation, destruction, joy, suffering, pleasure, pain. Ultimately, life is bigger than the pairs of opposites. The world is full of paradoxes, and life is full of opposites. The art is to embrace the opposites, accommodate the paradoxes, and live with a smile. Rest and activity. Activity and rest are two vital aspects of life. Balancing them is a skill in itself. Knowing when to have what and how much to have is wisdom. Finding them in each other, activity rest, and rest in activity is the ultimate freedom. The memory of hard work is more tiring than the work itself. Thinking you've worked hard interferes with the quality of rest. Some people take pride in just working hard without any achievement. And there are others who crave a long rest, not knowing that true rest is in non-doership. It's the quality of rest, even when it's short, that recuperates you. When rest is needed, your body automatically takes it. Resting without thinking about the need for it is more restful. Stretch out your hand first. Everyone has had a problem with someone. You shouted at them, or something happened, and afterward you expected to patch things up, yet you expect the other person to come forward. Suppose you want to greet them, but you have one concern. If I put myself out there and they don't respond, what will happen to me? Suppose you stretch out your hand and they don't shake your hand. What happens? You feel embarrassed and hurt. The greatest fear in the world is getting hurt. We don't mind physical hurt so much as getting hurt mentally and emotionally. A bruised ego. If everybody thinks, let the other person come and reach out first, then who will come? Nobody. This is what prevents people from coming together and feeling the sense of belongingness. Take a stand and stretch out your hand first. If the other person doesn't shake it, fine. So what? In fact, everyone wants to shake hands. They want to reach out, but they're afraid, waiting for somebody else to take the initiative and do it first. Important and unimportant. Too many people are stuck with what is important. Why do you always have to do only that which is important? For something to be important, there needs to be many things that are unimportant. You can't eliminate unimportant things. It's important to have unimportant things to make something important. Things are either themselves important or they make other things important. So that means everything is important and nothing is important. When you say something is important, you limit your vastness. A journalist asked me, why is it important to breathe? Why is it important to be happy? Why is it important to have peace? These questions aren't relevant at all. Why should you always look for what's important? Something unimportant contributes to something that is important. And what's important and unimportant changes with time and space. Food is important when you're hungry and unimportant when you're full. Everything is important is the path of service. Nothing is important is deep meditation. Intention, attention, and manifestation. Our life runs through intention. Everything we do has a desire, an intention, or an unconscious habit attached to it. Whether you want a glass of water, take a walk, or watch TV, first an intention arises in the mind. Make an intention and leave it to the universe. If you go to temples or where there's a fountain, they say, make a wish and drop it. You drop the coin in the fountain. And in the same way, an intention has to be dropped. Have an intention and consciously drop it. It will start manifesting. If you hold on to the intention, it becomes desire. And desire brings feverishness and heartache. Intention, attention, and manifestation go together. Wherever you put your attention, that will grow. Feeling you have abundance, abundance will grow. When you put your attention on lack, lack will grow. If our attention is consistently clinging to negativity, that's what will grow. If your attention is always on the negative, switch it to the positive. Just being aware of it, it already switches. Then give the time for it to manifest. Meditation is the skill in which you learn how to drop the intention and relax. Some night, when you're tucked away safely in bed, bring to mind a thought that there are no people at all in this world except you. Other people are like shells floating in the ocean, and your own karma, your past experience, is getting into those shells and reflecting back at you. Can you watch a wrestling match on television and see both people as yourself? Can you feel? It's my own consciousness that's acting one way in this mind and one way in that mind. in all these different minds, different roles are being played. But it's all me. A sparrow that looks in the window and believes that there's another sparrow. It keeps hitting the window and stains the glass with its own blood. The sparrow fights with itself and dies. This is exactly what's happening in the world. If we're fighting, we're fighting with ourselves. And now, our next article. 10 Ways to Embrace Wholeness Every Day. Expert advice on how to cut through the noise and get in touch with your truest self. By Bethany Heitman, Jenny Tug, published January 18, 2023. In the spirit of living more fully, we ask thought leaders we admire what wholeness means to them and how they cultivate it in their own lives. Whatever their expertise, philosophy, movement, psychology, spirituality, nutrition, addiction, their answers came down to this. It's an inside job. Forget perfection. To me, wholeness is the divine and unbreakable part of myself that it will always exist within me. It is the source of my power and presence. I've abandoned the quest to obliterate all my flaws so that I can become my higher self. I've also worked to stop over-identifying with the parts of me that continue to repeat mistakes. I've learned to see myself as a whole human being without a best self or worst self or any such identity hierarchy. I give myself free access to goodness now instead of waiting to see how well I perform so that I can calculate how much goodness I deserve. I try to remember that love, joy, dignity, connection, and freedom, these are birthrights, not prizes. I deserve them now, this very second, this very second. Not because I'm performing well, but because I'm alive. Catherine Morgan Schaffler, New York City-based psychotherapist and author of The Perfectionist Guide to Losing Control. Seek purpose. I'm a highly sensitive person, and like many sensitive people, my wholeness is tied to my sense of purpose. Purpose is essential for sensitive people because we're wired to look at the big picture, and choosing a purpose helps us fit into it. It's also a compass. When you choose a purpose for yourself, you get clarity on every stressful decision thrown your way. Should you accept an obligation or pass on it? Should you fight a battle or give in? The answers become easy because you can ask yourself whether the challenge aligns with your purpose. If it doesn't, it's not worth your stress. But if something does align with your purpose, do it. Fight for it. Get up early for it. Because putting energy in your purpose gives you the opposite of stress. It gives you wholeness. And you'll never regret the time you spent on things that gave you meaning. Andre Solo, co-author of Sensitive and co-founder of SensitiveRefuge.com. Let stuff go. Wholeness effortlessly reveals itself to me by turning inward and tuning into the divine design that already resides within me. When I place my full attention on that which is within, rather than on what I may think I am without, there is a well within all of us, vast and full of answers, clarity, and loving redirects. I am fully whole on the dance floor. Dance is an ever-evolving reflection of our lives. It is an invitation to release what I no longer need and to alchemize it in order to provide space for what does, in fact, make me feel fully alive, aligned, and wholly well. Tune into when you feel your most alive, most at ease. Who is near you? What are you talking about, thinking about? What are you feeling? Keep going in that direction. Stay and swim in that place, that wave, that frequency. Kristen Sadeckis, founder and CEO of ForeSpace, which offers sweat sessions that are equal parts cardio dance, athletic training, and moving meditation. Find your people. Wholeness for me is simple. It's being at home with my family. That's really it. It comes down to finding the place and people that allow you to be the most you. Ta-Nehisi Coates, author of The Water Dancer and Between the World and Me, and the host of Wakanda Forever podcast. Enjoy the journey. As a writer, I need a bit of structure in my day, and my to-do lists are often the tool I use to reach my goals. But we cannot think of our wholeness or healing as a thing to be achieved or items ticked off a list. So instead, I frame a wholeness in my life and writing as something to embody, a journey we choose to step into. Wholeness is fluid, seasonal, and cyclical, and diluting it to a to-do list doesn't do it justice. It involves our grief and our joy, our difficult moments and our often surprising epiphanies. Do you want wholeness? Consider the journey. In my new book, I give readers these words as a kind of daily medicine. I am a human being, and I'm always arriving. Embracing wholeness throughout our life is simply arriving and letting love and healing lead the way. For those of you who love a good to-do list or goal, it means you have to let go a little. Trust the season you find yourself in, and find out what wholeness might be asking of you in this moment. Caitlin Curtis, essayist, poet, public speaker, and author of Native. Stay true to your values. For me, wholeness is compassionately acknowledging all of myself rather than living in a way that focuses on overcompensating for or obliterating any so-called shortcomings. It's being aware of and releasing any emotional baggage as it reveals itself so that you become more of who you really are. After recovering from an immune system disease 17 years ago, I adopted a holistic attitude towards myself instead of seeing anything I didn't like, such as illness, low energy, a challenge, or people saying no, as an inconvenience or a sign of how I'm screwing up or failing. Putting my values and how I want to feel at the center of everything means I go towards what looks and feels right and away from what doesn't. This work-in-progress attitude invites me to be curious about my body, approach, and reaction to something, or the true nature of the situations telling me, and how I can take better care of myself and be more me. Natalie Liu, founder of the Baggage Reclaim Session podcast and author of The Joy of Saying No. Lead with intention. I feel most whole when I'm living with intention, knowing the why behind my actions, whether I'm in pursuit of conventional healthy habits or learning one of life's messy lessons, helps me feel aligned with myself in the best possible way. To bring more intention into your life, create a 5-minute ritual of checking in with yourself daily. Use this time to ask yourself if you need more or less of anything like self-compassion, discipline, or resources. By putting aside the noise of external advice, you can truly connect to what you need to feel whole. Lynn Saladino, psychologist in New York City. Nourish yourself in every way. I am a dietitian, so I'm trained to think about health and wholeness from the perspective of food. Although we eat daily, patients have taught me that wholeness encompasses nourishing mind, body, and spirit. Through clinical experience, I have learned that the act of embodying one's full self must be individualized and is always layered and nuanced. One of the ways I nourish my body and spirit is connecting with the land and its bounty. It gives me deep pleasure to visit farms and green markets and spend time in the kitchen preparing meals. I find it meditative and grounding. Food and nutrition are much aligned to culture. I encourage my patients to embrace their culture and include foods that are culturally relevant as a way to expand what shows up on their plates, and this is very much a part of wholeness. We also work to build an intentional rest, which can mean spending time in green spaces, taking time away from screens, and carving out space for pleasurable movement, breath, and enjoying. I found that time in nature is particularly restorative and a reminder that we are part of a larger universe. Maya Feller, founder of Maya Feller Nutrition in Brooklyn and author of Eating from Our Roots. Stay curious. I define wholeness as continued growing down process that helps you make what is unknown, known, what is unconscious, conscious. It's not about perfection or arriving at a specific destination. Rather, it's about the pursuit of meaning, following directives of the soul and connecting to the wisdom of your inner world. Personally, I embrace wholeness through a methodology I created that I call sobriety. This process requires deep listening, insatiable curiosity, a thorough understanding of our personal values, and the willingness to clearly see our own issues. With sobriety, wholeness is achieved by following the soul journey, pausing in the darkness, and applying a different way of knowing and allowing our pain to alchemize into purpose. When we allow soul to be the meaning-making machine, It acts as a constant guide toward the pursuit of wholeness in our life. Eliza Hollerman, PhD, author of Sobriety. Trust your gut. As women, we're told to look to others for guidance in our journey to be well. To me, wholeness means I check in with myself first to ask, what do I need? How do I feel? Where's my comfort? Women have received so many messages that we can't trust our own bodies. Wholeness is when we affirm, I am worthy of prioritizing my feelings, needs, and comfort, and can trust myself to know what's best for me. Melissa Urban, author of the book of Boundaries and the co-founder of The Whole 30. To close this episode, we'll end with the article, Why Embracing Whimsy May Be the Antidote to These Trying Times. Silly Girl Slumber, We Say Yes, by Sophia Lodato, published June 16, 2026. Newsflash, it's a dark and scary time. The majority of Americans are understandably stressed about the future of our country. And it's not hard to feel down when you're greeted by an onslaught of depressing headlines every time you open your phone. Thankfully, there's a way to lighten the existential load of this doom and gloom, but you have to be okay with not taking yourself too seriously. You have to be whimsical. Whimsy, to put it simply, is a playful, quirky, and lighthearted behavior or sense of humor. Think of Jess Day from New Girl or Gene Wilder's Willy Wonka. But the term has evolved into a way of life for many across social media, with many influencers sharing how they bring fanciful fun to their everyday lives, from naming all the bugs they see on the walks to playing the Mission Impossible soundtrack while doing chores. Admittedly, these trends seem ridiculous at glance, particularly if you're an adult with a job and bills and responsibilities. Many of us have been conditioned to earn or justify what makes us happy, explains therapist H.J. Joe, licensed certified social worker, making anything fun the first thing we abandon when life gets tough. But there are some surprising benefits to embracing this kind of bubbly frivolity from time to time. Whimsy is a form of play, and play of all kinds is the antidote to burnout and stress, Cho says. Thanks to its ability to lower stress, activate our brain's reward and pleasure pathways, and keep us connected with others. Getting playful also often involves novelty, new, unique, or out-of-routine experiences, which can make everyday life feel more fun while strengthening your brain. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Daily. I hope today's articles offered a moment to pause, reflect, and reconnect not only with yourself, but with the deeper presence that brings purpose and peace to our lives. And perhaps one of the best reminders is that embracing a little whimsy, a sense of curiosity and playfulness, isn't a distraction from life's challenges. It may be one of the very things that help keeps us grounded and hopeful through them. I'm Nicole McMahon, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. We hope you enjoyed listening, and please join us next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Oprah Daily is available as a podcast at our website, NorthCarolinaReadingService.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.